Hi, it's Joanna Oki here, and welcome back to the Deal Room podcast, a podcast brought to you by Aspect Legal. Last September, we released an exciting two-part series with Rod Hoare of HHMC Global, where we discussed Rod's tips on how to prepare your business for sale. These were episodes 5, which provided tips on getting sale ready for small service businesses, and episode 6, which was focused on medium and large service businesses. Unfortunately, episode 6 disappeared from iTunes shortly after we released it. We have our super IT detectives out in cyberspace looking for it, but in the meantime, for anyone out there who missed it, this episode is for you. In this episode, we focus on medium and large service businesses and the top 5 areas to focus on in getting these types of businesses in a sale-ready state. So here we go.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Good evening.
Are you ready?
Okay, here we go.
You're listening to the Deal Room Podcast. Join us as we bring you the inside scoop on business sales and acquisitions. Get across trends in the area. And hear the industry's best recount their real life tips, traps, and experiences. Now, here's your host, Joanna Oki.
Hi, Rod, and welcome back. I'm glad to have you on the show again, talking about preparing your business for sale.
Thanks, Joanna. It's a pleasure to be here.
Great. So today we're launching into part 2 of our 2-part series. Last episode, we talked about preparing for sale for SMEs, but today we're talking about medium to large companies. I guess maybe we should start off by clarifying what we mean by medium and larger businesses, as opposed to the SMEs that we were talking about in the last episode.
Yeah, I think it's important to look at the characteristics of different businesses as they change in size. And here we're talking about services businesses, and in the global scheme of large companies, they're not very large, but they're certainly got characteristics that are different from the SMEs we discussed previously. And so in this characteristic, I'm talking about organizations that probably have in Australian dollars profit above about $2 million profit before tax. And to be able to achieve that, a business needs to have characteristics related to sustainability and management capability and position in the marketplace and so on. And the companies that get a little bit bigger than that, sometimes beyond the sort of owner-dominant type business, and are moving more towards the corporate characteristics that larger businesses have. So really looking at owner-dominant and corporate.
And do you find that in this space, often you'll have a different type of buyer that's interested in these types of businesses versus the SMEs?
Oh, certainly. Partly because the check that needs to be written is larger, and therefore there's a different type of buyer who can write a bigger check, but also the characteristics of what a person is looking or what an organization is looking to achieve by an acquisition changes when the company is larger.
So I guess our SMEs, quite often, you know, you might have that range of potential buyers being, might be someone that is coming to purchase a business for them to run themselves as an individual or a group of individuals. But that's less likely the bigger the business gets, right? So our pool now is looking out to potentially larger purchases. Is that generally the experience you've had in this market?
Yes, that's right. So it'd either be larger companies in the same industry, in the same geography. So, you know, Australian companies buying larger Australian companies. But now the characteristics might be of the buyer that it might be an overseas company looking to expand to Australia, or it might be an investment-related entity such as private equity that's looking to get into a particular sector or geography.
Okay. All right. So tell us a bit then about the definitions that are relevant for our listeners to understand if they don't know their way around this M&A topic in this area.
Yeah, so by compare and contrast, we talked about the SMEs, and quite often a small to medium company is run for the benefit of the owner, in that it is gets the characteristics of a lifestyle organization. And here we're talking about organizations that have moved beyond that, and the leadership of the organization is looking to build the best business they can. They've got a strategy in place. They're looking to execute the strategy, and they start to take on characteristics that are less about the personality and the personal wishes of the shareholders, and more about the entity, the business itself. And so the larger owner-dominant businesses and then the corporate businesses are characterized by, I suppose, being less personality-driven, but still is there, and more about I suppose, what we expect of businesses, which is, you know, board characteristics and strong management teams, sustainability of revenue, quality of strategy, quality of financial capacity and characteristics and so on. And those characteristics not only come, allow these organizations to be larger and to be more predictable in what they do, but it also has the impact of, because of that sustainability and that repeatability, then the valuations and the value of these businesses goes up as well.
Mm. And I guess as well, to add to that, transition can be a bit easier when you're dealing with an organisation like this, because, as you say, it's less dependent on the personalities of individuals who, you know, might be the sellers, you know, the owner sellers in the SME examples.
Yeah, that's right. And so the transition is quite often that the management team don't change at all. They just have a new owner. And or if there are, you know, one or two shareholders maybe leaving, or people changing as part of an acquisition, but the bulk of the business and there are depths in the management team that are able to step up and take responsibility for the new owners and take the business forward. And that just comes with size, and it's just a characteristics of size.
Mm. It's interesting that you noted before that the valuation formula increases somewhat for a larger organisation. So, you know, I mean, I guess therein is even more incentive for SME owners to try and get their organisations to build them into a bigger beast if they're interested in the end value at sale.
Yeah. And so quite often a lifestyle business is actually being run to make profits for that year. And so the owner can withdraw profits for that year and sort of a creating wealth as you go. Whereas once you get into the larger businesses, they tend to be concentrating on equity value and rising equity value and looking to build a business that has the characteristics that are going to give them a greater equity value. Mm. There is a rule of thumb that is worth sort of putting out, and this comes from the private equity world, where if you look at the average of a particular sector in a country, so it's such as Australia, then the average value of that sector for the publicly listed companies, when you then look at the privately owned companies that have corporate characteristics but are not listed, they would be worth about 2/3 of what the publicly listed companies would be worth. And then the privately owned businesses, the sustainable privately owned businesses that are probably still owner dominant, they would be worth about 1/3 of what the publicly listed companies are worth. So there's some rules of thumb that do stand up over time and show that as the characteristics of an organization change and size and the sustainability and the repeatability of the business change, then the valuation does actually rise.
Yeah, interesting. Which obviously, I guess, is why some public listed entities, you know, find it attractive to go on an acquisition path.
Yeah, and look, depending on the industry and depending on the sector and the time frame and the objectives of the organization, acquisitions can be a very valid part of a growth strategy.
Mm.
Which I'm pleased about, given that's the business we're in.
Great. Okay. So I can't remember. Have we provided the definitions of, have we talked about working capital yet? Have we gone there?
let me just talk a little bit about some definitions first, and then I'll come forward. So one of the things we talk about with businesses that are owner dominant and then moving towards having corporate characteristics is, and I've mentioned sustainability, but it's sustainability of everything in the business. It's not just sustainability of earnings, but it's the sustainability of the management team and the sustainability of the internal processes and the strategy planning and the ability to handle disruptions and changes. So if a person leaves or a client is lost or an economic condition happens, it's how an organization is structured and able to handle that so that they can continue on and be a thriving entity. And as a company gets more towards the corporate characteristics that we describe, it includes things that would make the business able to be a listed entity, a publicly listed entity, if it so wished. So that might mean that moving towards an external board, having audited accounts, having, you know, professional management at the top level rather than maybe people just out of the industry who've grown up into the jobs. And so all of those characteristics become important and are looked for by somebody coming to do an acquisition. If I could just talk about the other thing that moves along there in terms of the definitions, is that if an organization is coming along to look at an organization, if it's a larger entity and it's going to live up to its expectation of being a more corporate entity, then that business should be ready for sale. So when, you know, they should always be available to have the conversation about an equity transaction.
Mm.
Whereas I don't actually recommend that for lifestyle companies because I think it's distracting. But once it's a larger company, it is a sign of the capacity and readiness of the organization to handle unforeseen circumstances. And so being always ready for sale has a whole bunch of characteristics, but it's mostly being totally on top of your business from, you know, a financial and management and position in the marketplace and so on.
And legal perspective, I guess we'd say as well.
Absolutely. So almost having done a mini due diligence constantly. And so, yeah, all of the legal compliance, not only in place, but you can prove that it's in place.
Absolutely. Okay, great. All right. Well, look, let's work in then to what our top five things are in getting a business ready for sale.
Certainly. I still include the personal plans of the shareholders need to be taken into consideration. And that doesn't apply to all companies in this sector, but many of the larger businesses in Australia are still privately owned and the founders are still actively involved in those businesses. And just like for a very small business, the personal goals and ambitions and the personal readiness, if you like, of those people becomes very important in an acquisition transaction. So if the business has been sold, the shareholders, those founding shareholders, need to be very organized personally to be able to make the decision to sell and to be able to walk away from something that's been an important part of their life. And sometimes if they don't have that in place, if they're too attached to the business and haven't thought about life after the business, that can actually stop a transaction going ahead because they're having to think and process a whole range of scenarios that they're not prepared for.
And would you say one of these areas as well is sort of bringing the team and key stakeholders along with you in that thought process as it, or that vision as it progresses?
Yeah, and look, and I do think that's probably the second characteristic, is that the thing that an organization can do to get ready is to have it as an active and open topic of conversation, that the management team have a shared vision and the scenarios for the future are talked about and the impact of those scenarios on the management team as a whole and on the individuals is talked about and known, and so that there's no surprise when that becomes a real life situation and those discussions are happening. The management team and the board do need to be very prepared and very organized and not have any sort of unspoken secrets, if you like, because it will show through. All of those things become very visible and very public during an acquisition process, and you need to have covered them off beforehand.
Absolutely. Unifying that vision, I guess that's what it's all about, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And look, I think it's important to, there's the old story out of the management books about getting the right people on the bus and then making sure that those people still want to be on the bus on for the journey. And that is so true because, you know, I think that an M&A process is one of the more emotional business situations you can be in.
Yeah.
And there is nowhere to hide and differences and, you know, a lack of unity will show up very quickly.
And, you know, it's interesting. I mean, obviously in some of these sale environments, there might be key personnel that are part of the management team that will be required to continue on with the business as part of a buy-in. So it's really important if that is going to underpin part of the value of your sale that you tick those areas off early on, because quite often, you know, even in the larger organizations, I find management teams are still connected in a personality sense sometimes with the underlying beneficial owners of an organization. So it's important to introduce these concepts early enough for people to settle into them, from my perspective.
Yeah, no, that's true. And look, especially since we're concentrating on services businesses here, it's not unemotional, and there are teams of people and there's the organizational staff who need to be motivated and kept aligned with the goals of the organization. And so the management team becomes a critical part of any acquisition transaction. You consider the recruitment industry where I concentrate. We quite often have people coming from North America or Japan or from the United Kingdom who are coming to our region to acquire companies. And they need a stable and continuing management team, or they, in their own hearts, can't make a decision to acquire a company because it's just too far from their home base.
Yeah.
You can't jump on a plane from London and be here to solve a staffing issue. Yeah. You've got to have a stable local team.
Yeah.
And, you know, if the management team is not prepared for that, then that will reflect in either no transaction or a reduced price on the transaction.
Mm. Yep. Great. Okay. All right. So then what's our third top tip in getting ready for sale?
We haven't talked about deal structures for larger companies. So in the previous podcast, we talked about how a multiple of profit and an earnout and discussions on working capital and so on. And all of those things still apply, but they're probably a little more rigorous and a little more defined, probably less creativity in the way deal structures are done with larger companies.
Mm.
So if you can imagine buying a listed company, you can buy a listed company by effectively writing a check and the company is yours. There is no discussion of earnout. There's no discussion of working capital and all those things because that's taken into account for what the value of the company is. It's a little more creative for privately owned companies where it's still a multiple of profit, but it's assumed that the working capital will be included, or the minimum working capital requirements. It's a very clear definition, not on actually normalized profit before tax, but on EBITDA, because you're expected to have much more sophisticated accounting, and therefore that is easily to be defined. And there is probably less emphasis on the deal structure, where there may still be an earnout and there may still be some payments in the future based on performance, but they'll be probably less creative and more structured.
Mm.
And to be able to achieve that, a company needs to constantly be ready in terms of its financials.
Mm.
We are still surprised at how, as companies grow, they don't necessarily increase the sophistication of the financial function within the organization.
Mm.
Smaller companies worry about the profit and loss statement and pay attention to the cash flow. When you get to be a larger company, the balance sheet becomes even more important.
Mm.
And having the very detailed and structured and predictive profit and loss balance sheet and cash flow becomes an important characteristic of showing how prepared you are and how sophisticated you are as an organization.
Mm.
And many organizations in Australia fall over on that.
Mm.
So the third tip is to have not only clean financials, but appropriately sophisticated financials and great governance around that so that how your financials are prepared, the quality of them, the payments you make, the compliance you have within your financial requirements are all very clearly identified and able to be proven.
Mm, great. All right. Wonderful. And then what's the fourth area we should be looking here in getting ready for a sale?
Well, I want to talk about how an organization can't be insular when it gets large. We quite often see with small to medium businesses that it is okay for the owner to basically shut themselves off from their industry and just run their business. If you want to be seen as a player in the market and as a contributor in the market and having a position in the marketplace, then as a larger company, you can't do that. The old Enron story about the smartest guys aren't in the room, I think, applies here. So even the management team, the board, they constantly need to be having external people looking at their business so that they are realistic about their performance, they're realistic about their position in the market, and they're realistic about their buyer audience. They know what type of company might come and look at them and what that company might be looking for.
Mm.
And that requires them to know their business intimately. It requires them to understand their industry sector intimately, and it requires them to have a very broad view, not only economic, but political, not only local, but international. And so to do that, they've got to be outside their business. They've got to be participating not only in the industry, but participating broadly around the world to make sure they know where they sit. If they have somebody who approaches from, I don't know, Japan or the UK or something, they need to know what that means and what the implications are for the company that's approaching them.
Mm. So with your work in the recruitment sector, then what is your advice, you know, in that particular industry for businesses that are in this medium to large size who are wanting to, who perhaps maybe aren't fully appraised of where they sit in the market and, you know, don't really have a good understanding about who their buyer might be, who the potential buyers are? What are ways that they can really start to get to understand these areas?
Mm. I think, first of all, they need to do things like benchmark their business so that they know whether they're any good or not. So it's no good saying we're the best at what we do and then you run some benchmark numbers across them and you find out that they're just average.
Mm.
So that's a bit embarrassing. But I think people need to just get out, and that means they need to travel, they need to talk to people, they need to get external people to come in and look at their business and look at particular aspects and not be afraid of what that uncovers.
Mm.
I personally think one of the advantages of living in Australia is that from a business strategy point of view, we tend to follow what happens in other countries, especially the United States, because that's the driver of most business strategy, in my opinion.
Mm.
And so go to conferences in the United States, travel to other parts of the world, look at what their issues are, and then you can come back to Australia and say, well, actually, they're probably going to be our issues within the next, 2 to 5 years.
Mm.
And be able to talk about that and talk to your staff and talk to your management team about those things so that as an organization, you're ready and prepared.
Mm, that's a great tip. I love that one. That's a really good one. Okay. Right. I think we're up to our fifth then. What's our fifth and final tip in relation to getting a business ready for sale?
This is an unusual one maybe, but people concentrate and think that selling a business is all about maximizing my profit because at the end of the day, who buys my business is going to pay a multiple of profit. And that is true. But there is a lot of sort of courting that needs to go on before that happens. And not only personality, but the attractiveness of the business is very, very important. And so one thing you might find is that organizations that are starting to think about or possibly thinking about selling will quite often increase the amount of public relations they do. They might speak a little bit more at conferences. They might do those sorts of things. Mm. And I think that is really valid because you have to position the business. You have to position your business publicly in terms of what you do and what you're good at. You need to make the business easy to find, and you can't be precious about things that are very, very important to you internal to the business, but are probably less important in the broader conversation.
Mm.
And so all of that sort of attractiveness of making yourself easy to talk to and maybe even sharing information about how your business is going becomes really, really important for an organization that is coming to look at a larger set of entities and working out who they're going to go and approach.
Hmm.
If they can't get a feeling for you in the public marketplace or in the industry itself, then they're probably not going to go and knock tap on your door.
Mm-hmm. All right, great.
So it's unusual. So we talk about, it's sort of the opposite of what I've talked about before in a lot of being a larger company is about being, great governance and great financials and all those sorts of things. But you actually still got to have the personality as a company.
Mm, that's interesting. Still putting yourself out there.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, as a personality of the business, I guess, to a degree. Great. Yes. Okay, all right, wonderful. So just as a recap there, we talked about the five top areas that businesses should be looking at in preparing themselves for sale if they're falling into that medium to large category, which is having a personal plan, having a great management team and a shared vision, having clean financials and great governance, knowing your business intimately. So I think there we talked about benchmarking and your position in the market and being realistic about the buyer audience. And then finally, positioning the business, getting out there, making the business easy to find, making sure it's got a public profile that a buyer will be able to pick up if it's looking for you in the market. So great. Thank you so much for coming in today, Rod, to talk to us in this second part. I think you've shared a lot of valuable insights. And of course, if any of our listeners want to read more about the insights you provide, where should they go?
Yeah, our contact details are available on our website, as well as a lot of blogs which relate to this type of conversation. So at hhmc.com.au.
And you guys push out a lot of content, don't you? I see your content and it's really, it's really good content, particularly, and I think it's probably applicable generally to services businesses, but obviously particularly to recruitment businesses.
Yeah, we do find that people from other service industries follow our content and seem to get some value out of it. So we're really pleased about that.
Great. Okay, wonderful. Well, look, once again, thanks so much for coming in again, Rod. And hopefully we'll have you back again soon to talk about some more of these areas of interest to our listeners.
Thanks very much, Joanna.
Great.
Well, that was it for the interview with Rod, and I'd like to now add a few things to think about here from a legal perspective, because being prepared from a legal perspective can make a massive difference in terms of the pool of buyers you may have access to, the price you will be able to negotiate, and the ease of the transaction. Now, back in episode 4, I spoke with Liz Lee, who heads up the merger and acquisition division of our legal practice, Aspect Legal, and we discussed in detail detail this topic of the legal aspects of priming your business for market. So as a bit of a quick rehash, here's an overview of the sorts of things you should be thinking about. Number one, make sure all of your company documents are in place. Check back on your shareholders' agreements and any other agreements with partners to make sure any issues in relation to dealing with sale and the sale proceeds are clear from the outset. I've seen many cases of business sales stalling when owners suddenly have differing opinions of their rights in a sale. Look, you don't want to play this sort of dirty laundry in front of a buyer. You don't want a potential buyer caught up in any of this. So you really need to make sure it's absolutely clear before you begin down the sale path. If you've got documents in place, make sure you refresh your mind as to what they say. And if you don't have them in place, maybe you need to think about ensuring that you're on the same page with your partners in the business before you start down this sale path. Number two, make sure that your business structure is appropriate for sale. The structure of the business and the underlying ownership structure within it can massively impact the take-home component of a sale price. So just make sure you understand this at the outset, well before you even consider taking the business to market. If structure issues need to be resolved, it will often require a long lead time in order to bed it down. So get it reviewed as early as possible by people who understand how this plays out in a sale environment. Number three, think about the key areas of value in the business and of how to lock them in. If this relates to supply or customer relationships, often the best way for you to lock in this value is contractually. If significant value sits in intellectual property, then you need to take the best steps possible in order to be able to prove that these are owned by you. So ensuring that you have a provable chain of title and registrations in place. And where possible, you need to ensure that you have them protected. Where your business is location dependent and a key part of the value lies in that element, you should also be reviewing your leases and ensuring that you have those primed for a sale. And the fourth element here is to get ready for due diligence and establish systems for reducing risk. Ensure that when a potential buyer lifts the hood, they won't be surprised. Ensure your key contracts are in order and are either assignable or not captured by change in control clauses, which can be a tricky one for people who haven't thought about taking their business to market before. Ensure your HR is in order and that you have all necessary agreements, documents, and processes in place. Ensure that you have appropriate supplier agreements providing protection for your business in its key supply relationships and appropriate client agreements that don't provide overly onerous indemnity or liability provisions because buyers really hate these. Those are four top tips for you to be thinking about from a legal perspective. If you'd like to hear more about these topics, then head over to our show notes at thedealroompodcast.com or through our website at aspectlegal.com.au and head over to episode 4, Sale of the Century, Legal Tips to Prime Your Business for Market. Or you can just head over to our show notes at thedealroompodcast.com or our website at aspectlegal.com.au, where you can get in contact with our lawyers so that you can have a detailed discussion with them about each of the elements that you should be considering when preparing your business for market. Because those things that we talked about really are just the top four to make it simple to talk about, but there's a heap more that we have together in a checklist. And so it's really important that you're detailed and you go through each of these areas and aren't surprised when you're getting prepared for sale. If you'd like to hear more of my discussions with Rod Hoare from HHMC Global, then at the website that I talked about before, check out episode 5, where we discuss the top tips for smaller service businesses in preparing for sale, and episode 18, where we talk about the impact of geopolitical issues like Brexit, Trump, and Asian markets developments. Or if you'd like to get in contact with Rod at HHMC, just head to the page for this episode, which is episode 21. And there we'll have a link to his website at hhmc.com.au. On that episode page, you'll also be able to download a transcript of this episode and find details of how to contact our lawyers at Aspect Legal if you or your clients would like to discuss any legal aspects of sales or acquisitions. We've got a great number of services that help businesses both prepare for a sale or acquisition to get transaction ready and to help guide businesses through the sales and acquisitions process. We work with clients both big and small and have different types of services depending on their size and complexity so that you have appropriate services depending on the size of the sale that you're talking about. So look, don't hesitate to book an appointment if you want to find out how we might be able to assist. Well, that's it for this episode. You've been listening to Joanna Oakey and the Deal Room podcast brought to you by Aspect Legal. See you next time.
Ladies and gentlemen.
That will conclude this evening's entertainment.
Thanks for listening to the Deal Room podcast. To find out more about this episode and other episodes in the series, check out the show notes or head over to our website at thedealroompodcast.com.au.